truth. The yellow light!
I'm walking here! I'm walking!
The light's
go! Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Wednesday. To get you through this crisis in a world where few things are reliable. We are reliable. Jason Rancho live on AM 770 KTTH. We're streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. Community leaders are now stepping up and saying, hey, CHOP, it's time to pack it in. Are they going to listen? Where are they going to go? Bubba Wallace unloads in an interview with CNN. The same way you guys unloaded on me via Twitter because of my defense of Bubba Wallace. I'm going to continue it, but I want you to at least be open-minded on this conversation. Plus, a local business facing some heat calls for boycott after a general manager used the N-word against a woman, though not in the actual restaurant. So we're going to explore that. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So there's still no plan to retake the East Precinct in CHOP. The Capitol Hill occupied protest. They're still there. They're certainly starting to dissipate. There's certainly not as many of the protesters there than there were over the course of the last 2 weeks. It turns out when you've got a bunch of gun violence, someone dying, kind of scares some people away. That's the right move to take, is to go somewhere else. That's the right position to take, realizing that this maybe has gotten completely out of control from what you once wanted it to be. But there's a rumor that some of these folks are going to split away and just continue their activism at the Space Needle. Right now, there appear to be two separate groups within this one greater CHOP group. Two groups of thought, I guess I should say. One wants to stay. One wants to lock arms, not let people into the East Precinct, not allow the East Precinct to be taken over by cops once again. These are the hardcore activists there. Not necessarily dangerous, but the true believers in the cause of CHOP. At the same time, there's another group that potentially wants to go down to the Space Needle because they believe that it's going to reinvigorate the movement, changing the location, a spot where presumably they might be given more space to roam. Because if you thought it was the Capitol Hill block party, maybe this is what Bumbershoot becomes over at the Space Needle. If they were to do that, it is going to be kind of interesting. Because the Space Needle right now is pretty much dead. There's no one there. The museum's closed. The movie theater's closed. The armory is closed, I believe. So I'm not entirely sure I know what the goal would be if they were going to the Space Needle, other than the symbolism of being tied to a tourist attraction, I guess. So we'll see what ends up happening. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that right now there is no plan coming from Mayor Jenny Durkin on closing down CHOP and retaking that East Precinct. All we have from Mayor Jenny Durkin are words. Words, 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 bumper sticker talking points, more words, 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 a stumble here or there during a press briefing, and then more words. No plan, no timeline. You'd think that 2 full days later, you'd have something from her. You'd think that. We don't. Councilwoman Lorena Gonzalez, talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio, confirmed.
We on the Seattle City Council, we're still waiting to hear details on what the plan to move forward is.
Now, to be clear, understand that when Council President Gonzalez says that, she's being disingenuous. The only reason she's acknowledging this is she wants to be able to attack Mayor Jenny Durkin and weaken her chances of reelection. Producer Peyton, do you remember who I said was going to run for mayor?
Tammy Morales?
What'd you say?
Tay Morales?
No.
Teresa Mosqueda?
There you go. Teresa Mosqueda. Who is Teresa Mosqueda's key ally on the council? Say Lorena Gonzalez.
Lorena Gonzalez.
I am so glad you are learning from me. That's all that this is about. It is weakening Mayor Jenny Durkin. Now, to be fair, Mayor Jenny Durkin should be seen as a weakened mayor. She's got no control over the city. She has no idea what's happening. She's not shown any leadership. Leadership would have come up and say, you know what? We believe in the right to protest peacefully. What CHOP has become and what CHOP is and what CHOP was born at out of was not peace, but violence. And we're not going to allow an entire neighborhood in Seattle have this kind of risk against their public safety by getting rid of a police station. She could have done that, but she did not want to tick off the far, far, far leftists in Seattle because she fears that she's going to be challenged by a far, far, far leftist for her reelection. She's right to fear that. It's going to happen. Who it's going to be, it's going to be Teresa Mosqueda. Nikita Oliver's probably going to step up again. Maybe Shama Sawant. We'll see. But it was a bad strategy because all she did was alienate the reasonable Seattle voters. And yes, there are some of us out there. But Lorena Gonzalez is doing this from a position of supporting CHOP. She was a supporter of those protests. The protests that were violent. She just pretended that there was no violence because it gave her some moral coverage. There were so many people who were pretending, flat out pretending, that the violence wasn't happening. But now she's suddenly speaking on behalf of the businesses.
I've been having contact with some small business owners in the area who are supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement, but would like to see a different model for ongoing protests in the neighborhood.
How interesting is that? I kind of feel like that's what I was reporting for the last 2 weeks. I was reporting that. How many times on this show did we say the businesses felt uncomfortable coming forward out of fear of retribution, that a lot of them support the grander movement of Black Lives Matter, and were probably out there marching peacefully with all of those folks outside of CHOP, but they realize what's happening in CHOP is unsafe and untenable. And I was told, Fox News was told, that we were just all lying. We were making it up. All of a sudden, the left started to use the term fake news. How weird is that? The Daily Beast claimed that the businesses within CHOP simply adore it. They love CHOP. They want more of CHOP. That was not truthful.
When there's blood on the streets, there needs to be some respect. And that's the problem here. We've got blood on our streets now, and it's happening every day. And it's thick. And it's not stopping. I don't see it stopping.
That's Kelly Forsyth. She is a neighbor who lives in this area, speaking to Como TV. Do you think the businesses want to deal with literal blood in the streets? Do you think the folks who live there want to deal with this?
It's just been a pressure cooker for 13 days, endless pressure cooker, and it needs to be cleaned up.
But we were told we were lying when we said the exact same thing. And now, thankfully, there are more media outlets almost at this point exclusively covering this aspect of the story. I am so glad that they finally stepped up to focus their attention on this. There are, of course, some outliers. Seattle Times, for the most part, seems to be the cheerleader for CHOP. You've got The Stranger, which, of course, is a cheerleader for CHOP. But now, finally, people are starting to wise up to what's going on there. Not nationally. We're never going to get any national coverage outside of Fox News, to be honest about this, I don't think. I'm certainly not going to hold my breath. But all it took for this new narrative, which happens to be the truth, all it took for the truth to start being reported, all it took for activists and some media outlets to see what was really going on at CHOP was a murder. Were three other shooting victims on top of the 19-year-old who was murdered. Imagine just for a moment, as maybe unfair as this is to imagine, but imagine just for a moment if they owned up to what was really going on at CHOP. Just really a few days before any of the shootings. Just imagine for a moment if instead of pretending this was the summer of love or a street festival or a peaceful homeland of social justice, imagine if the media was just a little bit more honest, generally speaking, about what was going on. Imagine if all the people who pretended that CHOP was this peaceful homeland, this utopia, were actually working to make it safe as they pretended it was, instead of pretending that there wasn't any violence. Would a 19-year-old still have been killed? And kudos to Andre Taylor from Not This Time, an activist I don't often agree with. But he's stepping up and he's saying, look, you want to blame Donald Trump for what's going on here? Maybe you want to blame Jenny Durkin? A 19-year-old black teenager was killed under your watch.
Oh, somebody just got shot there. Yeah, but chop. Wait a minute. You're just going to look over this black man that got killed over here? This young baby, this 19-year-old? No. You're going to pause and you're going to think about this black man because that's the reason you did it for. If they realize that, they won't be stuck to a place. But I don't think they've realized that yet. And I don't think they believe that yet. And I think that's the issue.
Good for him to speaking up like that to Como TV. Good for him. Because you need some more of these activists and community leaders to step up and say what's going on in CHOP is wrong and it's dangerous. Meanwhile, one of the shooting victims, the one from Friday night or Saturday morning, Friday night, he's come out. He's speaking to Cairo 7. He's claiming, rather unbelievably, that white supremacists shot him. Producer Peyton, it is 3:14 on June 24th. What am I about to ask you to do?
Sounds like Jason Tells the Future.
Jason Tells the Future. You just told the future, although I kind of led you into it.
I still told it before it happened. Look
that
at me.
That's true. Peyton told the future before Jason now tells the future. We're going to have a follow-up probably in the coming days that will label almost everything that comes out of DeJuan Young's mouth fabricated. I don't believe any of this story. Now, I'm just saying I don't believe it. It is certainly possible that he is telling the truth when he tells Cairo 7 that he was shot at close range, managed to survive, shot multiple times at close range by white supremacists.
So basically, I was shot by, I'm not sure if they're Proud Boys or KKK, but the verbiage that they said was, hold this and shot me. And they stood over top of me and continued to fire, and I tried to protect myself and got shot in the arm. Like, and they got away.
They stood on top of you, a group of people. They shot you multiple times and you lived to survive. How'd that happen? How'd that work out? How is it that he's saying exactly what Shama Sawant was pretending happened over the weekend, though she had absolutely no intelligence on what had actually gone down? How is it that CHOP security, who I thought was referring to DeJuan Young and Lorenzo, the one who was unfortunately murdered, why is it that they said you guys knew each other and that there was some gang affiliations?
I understand everybody's going to say, oh, it's the Chaz zone and y'all asked for the police not to be there, so don't act like y'all need them now. But technically, I was outside of that area.
Oh, okay.
I was in Seattle streets, so what's the excuse now?
Okay, yeah. Got it. He's setting up for a lawsuit. Now, to be fair, he's probably right to sue. The SPD didn't go and help him, nor did the Seattle Fire, because of the rules on the books that the cops and the fire department had to follow. The cops didn't make that choice. Fire department didn't make that choice. These are rules that they have to follow. So watch him sue the city. You can add this to my Jason Tells the Future. He's going to sue the city for negligence. And by city, he'll probably go after SPD. He should go after the mayor's office. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So the general manager of a sushi restaurant near the CHOP got into a fight with a couple of black women, calling one of them the N-word. It was caught on cell phone video. It was posted to Twitter. It was taken down from Twitter for some reason. I'm not entirely sure I know why. I saw it. We've got audio. I'm not going to play it. It's a little bit too difficult to actually hear. But you can very clearly hear the guy says the N-word, right?
Yeah, and the crowd reaction behind
to it was
very loud.
Yeah. And so we don't know what the fight was about. We don't know what happened before the fight. We just know that there was some kind of verbal altercation between them. He calls one of the women the N-word. The couple of women start to hit him. And then other people from the crowd join in. Again, don't know what preceded it, but calling someone the N-word is obviously odious. It is despicable. It is disgusting. Now, as a result, activists are calling for a boycott of this restaurant. Activists are saying from Mamiji, Is that how I pronounce it?
I assume so. I've never been there.
I've never been there either. I don't even think I'm familiar with this restaurant. It's a sushi restaurant, I guess, that's, I'm assuming, is mildly popular in the region because it's expensive to own a restaurant there and be around. So people are calling for a boycott. They end up firing the GM. They apologize. The owners made a donation of $10,000 to a nonprofit, which, by the way, the nonprofit returned the money. Kudos to them for that, although they get into a little bit of craziness afterwards. But I think a reasonable question is whether or not the boycott is appropriate. The fight didn't take place in the restaurant, and I don't know if it was a dispute that started in the restaurant, and this just happens to be a guy who works at this restaurant who used the N-word. And the company, I mean, was he working at the time, or is this a result of you know, just essentially doxing, finding out who this odious person is?
Yeah, there was no context in that video to show whether or not it was associated yeah. with the restaurant, or whether this guy was just off the clock, you know, being racist.
Yeah, and like, if he's off the clock being racist, and they fire him, and it had nothing to do, that it just seems bizarre to me that people would want to boycott the restaurant. And I'm not, so I'm waiting, I'm withholding my judgment on the boycott aspect, and maybe even not. Let's say he was working at the time. Okay, unless they knew this guy was a virulent racist, they fired him immediately.
Yeah, they took very quick action. They should be getting some praise
for how quickly they acted. After calls for a boycott and say, okay, I guess now we got to do it. I thought they handled it relatively appropriately. I don't like the idea of just giving $10,000 to a nonprofit because it mostly seems like you're trying to buy forgiveness. Just, you know, do the right thing, what you think. The owner, Stephen Hahn and Lawrence Yeh, they put out an apology video on Instagram.
I want to apologize to the black community and to the Chop community for today's disgusting incident. I personally reached out to the individuals who were accosted. The next manager who was involved in this incident has been fired. His partnership has been terminated. His actions were both dangerous and racist.
Yep.
And it doesn't represent us at all, our core values or our beliefs.
And I think that's a point that should be underscored, right? There's no evidence that these two owners of the restaurant are virulent racists. It just, there's at least none that I've seen, so it just seems weird that you would go after the restaurant.
Yeah, unless there's been altercations there before.
Sure.
And people have talked about it, but this is the first time hearing
of it. This guy has been known for this kind of thing, and only now is he being fired. Okay, fair enough. Then at that point, I would be all in on boycotting this restaurant.
Family, community, equality. The big reason we built this place so people would come together, have fun, enjoy good food, but feel safe.
I mean, you came up with a restaurant so people could feel safe?
Everyone's got their own ways,
okay,
man.
Fine.
We cannot undo what has happened, but we will try our best to make it right. We will be meeting with Black Lives Matter leaders, Chop community leaders, and Asian American community leaders on how to improve Black and Asian relations.
And I'm sorry to put you on the spot and tokenize you for a moment, but in fairness, if they said there was a problem between Jewish people and black people, I would speak up as a Jew to give just some... Is there a rift between the two communities?
Not that I'm aware of, but also my grandma doesn't think that I am in touch with my roots as much as I should be.
I mean, I wanted to say something too, but I didn't think it was my place. Grandma was texting me and saying, hey, get in Peyton's ear.
If my 94-year-old grandma was able to use a phone, I would be amazed.
We'll be implementing racial bias training immediately. And lastly, we will be making monetary donations to organizations who support black communities.
So that's the stuff that really bothers me, because it doesn't seem like you're interested in anything but buying forgiveness. Now, I would forgive if it was the general manager used an anti-gay or anti-Semitic slur, and it was under the same exact circumstances. I would not expect the owners of the sushi restaurant to apologize to me and my community. I certainly would appreciate, I could appreciate them putting out a statement and just saying, hey, just FYI, this had nothing to do with us, that we find it abhorrent and odious, and we got rid of this lunatic. We don't want anything to do with it. Okay, that's cool. But then if they came up and said, oh, and by the way, I'm giving Hillel $10,000. Then I'm like, okay, now you're trying to get me to accept your apology that I didn't even really feel like I was owed to begin with. That seems like you're going an extra step just to placate folks who likely won't ever be satisfied with your response. Like if I'm the type of person who would want to blame a restaurant for something the restaurant didn't do, giving $10,000 to an organization is not likely going to satisfy my thirst for whatever it is I'm after. And kudos, by the way, to the organization, at least in part, Washington Block. It stands for Washington Building Leaders of Change. They got the $10,000 and they said, we got it, but we don't want it. They refunded the money. They said in a statement, this reactionary donation undermines the integrity and intentionality of our organization. As a result, we at WABLOC and Creative Justice have refunded the donation. Accepting a lump sum of funding does nothing to hold donors and businesses like this accountable. Now, again, the way that they're talking makes it sound like there was some bigger connection to the restaurant. And that's where I'm going to leave open for more reporting. But they're right to just reject the money. You don't get to buy. If you were responsible, or even if you believe you hold some responsibility for what happened, just simply giving money to any organization is not acceptable to me. That doesn't show that you're actually looking for change. It just shows you're trying to pay people off. But then the statement goes into a place where I'm going away from them. We're calling on Momiji to use the $10,000 that was originally donated to pay reparations to the black woman who was subjected to hate and abuse by their former manager. Restitution is owed to the person who was directly harmed. Okay, it's not reparations. I understand, like, if the woman were to sue, if there was a crime in all of this, and I don't know what the crime would be listed as. Okay, I mean, that's between the business and the customer, I guess. But this whole idea that, no, you got to pay 10 grand to this woman. I mean, okay, I understand why you don't want the money. Let's just step back at that point. Let them then figure it out. Don't let them use you for cover, fair enough, but you don't have the reparations.
This charity's trying to be the court system now.
Maybe that's what they mean when, like, activists say, we want to get rid of the court system. They mean, let us figure this out internally. Activists. Okay. I'd love to find out what really went on and some more of the context. Aren't you curious? I'm just curious.
There's got to be more.
If there's not more, then I don't know what else the restaurant is supposed to do. If there's more context, we'll certainly deliver it to you when we find out. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. When we come back, Bubba Wallace is pretty ticked off. We're going to tell you why when we come back on the Jason Ranch Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really, really do appreciate it. I'm going to be on Tucker Carlson later tonight. Hopefully, you'll be able to catch the video when I post it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Or you can go ahead and send me a text with the keyword Facebook to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll just send you a direct link so you can give us a follow. Text Facebook to 1-800-465-8770. So, I want to talk about Bubba Wallace, and hopefully today will be the last time that we talk about it. I have that position for a number of reasons, which we'll get into in a moment. Part of it, though, is that you guys are just killing me on Twitter because I dared to take a position that some of you don't necessarily agree with, and I'm always of the position that I don't need people to agree with me on everything. In fact, if you agree with me on 100% of everything, there's something wrong. There's something wrong because that's just not normal. We're bound to disagree, and it is okay to disagree. You can disagree on substance. You can disagree with me on my analysis and reasoning. But let's not disagree on pretending facts aren't facts. That's the only thing that does kind of bug me, whether we're talking about this story or any other story. So let's go with the facts on what happened with Bubba Wallace and his NASCAR team. So someone on Bubba Wallace's team said they found a noose in the garage ahead of this Geico 500. Someone on his team then reported it to NASCAR. Wallace himself, Bubba, did not see it. He never claimed to have seen it. His team member did, and obviously the team member and or NASCAR made Bubba Wallace aware of what they thought that they had found. Now, understandably, he was ticked off about this. He was concerned. He was scared. Because just a few days earlier, he came out against the Confederate flag being displayed at events. NASCAR ended up banning it. It was deemed controversial to some. A reasonable person a reasonable person who just came out against the Confederate flag, a symbol to a lot of people of hate and racism. And I know a lot of people say it's just historically. Let's be clear. There are some people who can very, very rationally explain away the Confederate flag as a racist symbol. Whether or not you want to agree with that is on you. But folks came out against the removal of the flag that he believes to be racist. Right after that, you learned that there was a noose in your garage that was told to you by NASCAR officials, by the president of NASCAR, you would think you're getting targeted. It doesn't matter if he was targeted or not. You would think you're being targeted. I think that that is a reasonable position. So NASCAR puts out their statement. They say, hey, we found a noose. We found it at this garage. We're now going to investigate. And by the way, FBI is helping out. So FBI comes in, 15 or 16 agents, they come in. They do their investigation. They speak to people. They look at forensic evidence. And they did so very, very quickly. And they come out and say, in a statement, using the term noose, they say a noose was there. And the noose was there as early as October of 2019. And yet some people, and this is primarily happening on the right, at least on Twitter, some people are coming out and saying, number one, this was a plant. Number two, it was a total hoax. Bubba Wallace was in on it from the start, and now he is trying to get a whole bunch of extra points and publicity and sponsors off of it. And if that were the case, if there was any proof to that, count me in. I will jump on Bubba Wallace too. I will call him out. I think anyone who would do that the way Jussie Smollett did it is despicable, is divisive, should not be rewarded by having a high-paying, high-profile job with NASCAR. But there's literally no evidence presented that he was in on this at all. Again, remember, he never even said he saw the noose. He's never taken the position that he saw the noose. And again, remember, if you were him, under these circumstances, under this context, what would your response be? Would your response be, oh, no, never mind, I don't believe it, can't be true. That's not reasonable. So Bubba Wallace was on CNN last night with Don Lemon. Blah. Don Lemon. At least it wasn't with what's-his-face, Chris Cuomo.
I think last week you said Don Lemon.
I don't know who I dislike more. But he goes on with Don Lemon. He points out that he found out about the news from the president of NASCAR. What is it? Steve Schmidt, I think his name is.
Steve Phelps.
Phelps. And so he walks through what happened on CNN.
I would probably say one of the hardest things, if not the hardest thing he's ever had to tell somebody. Tears rolling down his face, choked up on every word that he was trying to say, that the evidence that he had brought to me that a hate crime was committed, quote unquote. And I immediately thought my family was in danger. And so I was about ready to call my mom and dad and to make sure everybody was okay. And it was in the garage stall that our car was at. And so I was kind of like taken back and not really comprehending everything. I was just like, what? But the way that I was communicating, like Steve was communicating to me that everything was going on, it showed the testament to him and the character that he has and how he's representing the sport and how he wants to stand up for what's right. And he's not going to tolerate any racist acts or anything. And I stand behind Steve. I stand behind NASCAR. And like they said in their statements, if it happened again, they wouldn't change anything. They would do it all over again. Well, but I never seen the noose. I never reported it. Like I said, I was going to dinner.
So is anything that he said there just proof of some kind of hoax? Now, maybe you don't believe him. Okay, fine. You don't have to believe him, but you still need to have evidence. And simply pointing to Jussie Smollett as evidence is not evidence. If you want to go after NASCAR, which I think is completely legitimate, have at it. I talked about this yesterday. I don't think NASCAR handled this the right way. I think they put out a statement when they could have, it seems like, very easily shown that this quote-unquote noose had been there just a few months earlier. I don't think they should have gone public until they at least had done just some of the investigation. They chose not to do that. So go ahead and criticize NASCAR. Why would you criticize Bubba Wallace? What has he done? He's not Jussie Smollett. He didn't forward this. He didn't move this along. Jussie moved his hoax along. That's what Jussie Smollett did. In this case, with Bubba Wallace, I would argue the media did. The media was trying to paint this as proof that NASCAR fans and Republicans, by and large, that's what they're talking about here. It's just code. They're talking about Republicans. They wanted to use this as proof that NASCAR fans are racist when they're clearly not. Bubba Wallace is the epitome of an example of showing how, no, NASCAR fans are not racist at all. Look at how they came to support him. Look at how everyone in the sport seemingly came to support him.
I'm pissed. I'm mad because people are trying to test my character and the person that I am and my integrity. And they're not stealing that away from me, but they're just trying to test that. And as a person, Don, that doesn't need the fame, doesn't need the hype, doesn't need the media, I could care less. I give two craps about that. But to sit there and read, and that's my problem. I'm reading too much into it and investing too much time into it. I am.
Don't. Oh, shut up, Don. I mean, I agree.
I know. I'm trying hard not to. And after tonight, I'll probably turn my phone off, unfortunately, until about 7:30 in the morning, where the interviews start back up again and we get to it all over.
Okay. Now, some people, including on our text line at 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770, some people are saying that every single garage has this rope pulled down that looks like a noose. And I think that that is a fair point to raise. But it doesn't prove any kind of conspiracy. The FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, said the only stall with a rope that looked like a noose was this one. They went through all of the stalls, and this was the only one with the noose-shaped rope, if that's how you want to call it. If you don't think it's a noose and you just think it's a rope that looks like one, okay, that's also fair. But it's not fake to say noose, folks. The FBI uses the term noose in their statement 4 times. They don't dispute that this was a noose. They don't dispute it. That's how they talked about it. And simply going on CNN or anywhere else after you have already agreed to do the interview is not, quote unquote, forwarding the hoax narrative, as our friend in the 253 just texted us. He's not forwarding the hoax narrative. He's responding to the results of the FBI investigation. Now, some people, again, like our friend in the 253 is saying, why can't they release a photo of it? Well, number one, it sounds like the photo of it was already released, just not by NASCAR. But number two, they're still doing the investigation, so they're not putting out anything. Now, again, if you don't think that NASCAR is handling this the right way and you would handle it a different way, I think that is totally fair. I agree with that. I agree with that point. But simply saying they didn't release the photo of the news shows it didn't exist. Okay, but you understand, following that logic, if they do, in fact, then release a photo of the noose, you're going to say, some people will say, oh, it's fake. Doesn't exist. It's staged. It's not real. What are you talking about? It's photoshopped. Oh, it's clearly not a noose. Do you think the FBI is lying? Seriously, that is a question I have. Do you think, for the folks who disagree with me, and again, that is fine to disagree with me, you can disagree with everything I say, and I don't take it personally. I hope you don't take it personally that we disagree either. But if you disagree with my position on this, do you think that the FBI is making this up? Because if the FBI came out and said, you know what, this is a total hoax, not only was it not a noose, I got proof that Bubba Wallace himself put it up. Would you then say, oh, well, the FBI is lying? Or would you use that as evidence to go after Bubba Wallace? You cannot have it both ways. You cannot have it both ways. You can't say on the one hand you're going to only listen to the FBI when they say things you want them to say, And then when they don't, say, oh, well, it's wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. Now, another text that we're getting also from the 253 is quoting something that Bubba Wallace had said about the news. He said, today's despicable act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go in society and how persistent we must be in the fight against racism. He said that when NASCAR came up to him and said they found a noose in his garage. Put yourself in his position and be good faith about it. And tell me what Bubba Wallace should have said or felt, given the context of what it is we're saying. Be fair and tell me what you think he should have said. Go ahead and text me. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Someone from the 425 said, to be fair, the FBI has been lying for 3 years. Well, James Comey was definitely a liar. This is the FBI under the Trump administration. And this, by the way, is the Department of Justice for Northern Alabama. So let's not pretend that this is like being hardcore infiltrated by progressives. Let's be fair about this. Send me your text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Jason Rancher, thank you so much for all the text messages. Mostly disagreeing with me, but that's okay. It's okay. Producer Peyton, have I ever gotten upset that people disagree?
No. I disagree with you every day. Like your hairstyle
You're just a dum-dum. That's ridiculous. My hair is amazing. You're just doing that because you want to make me upset.
It's okay to disagree with you, Jason.
Not on my hair. On
everything that you do, I can disagree.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to continue the conversation and send me a text message. Fox Business has a breakdown of a survey that was done by Bankrate that said only 47% of Americans are losing sleep over money despite the pandemic. And I looked at that originally. I was like, what do you mean only? 47%? Isn't that a lot? It's almost half. Almost half of the people surveyed.
Good job. That's almost half.
Oh, but almost half are concerned about money. That's a lot. And then I started to read the actual results and some of the analysis, and I kind of find myself of two minds on this story. So Bankrate is essentially saying that they're shocked the numbers aren't worse than what they are, which I guess is a valid point to make, that they, in theory, could have been much worse given the fact that we're going through a pandemic that saw a lot of jobs be effectively closed down by the government. So I get that. I understand that. But the fundamentals of the economy were strong going into the pandemic. There was a good part of this country that was able to still work, whether it's remotely or because they have a quote unquote essential job. And the economy is currently reopening right now. So maybe in the context of those facts, we assumed the data would be a little bit different. Now, according to Ted Rossman, he's Bankrate's industry analyst. He says, in the context of the worst unemployment crisis since the Great Depression, it's shocking that the figures aren't far worse. Government stimulus programs are helping, and many who are currently out of work seem confident they will soon return. It also helps that the economy was in good shape prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, that's what I just said. That's good analysis. Except I'm not necessarily shocked that the figures aren't worse, because I want to believe, and I do believe, that for the most part, the American people understand some of this stuff. They're able to look at a job that was closed down by the federal government, or by really the state government. They can say, oh, well, that's not because the business isn't doing well. It's not because the economy isn't strong. It's because of a pandemic. So why would they look at that and think that, oh, this must mean the economy's never coming back because it's just really bad? You then look at the numbers, and the numbers all still seem tied to the pandemic specifically. They say for the 47% who are worried about money issues, 23% said their cause of stress revolved around everyday expenses. The next most worrisome money trouble for Americans revolve around saving enough for retirement, a concern that 19% admitted keep them awake at night. Now, that makes sense to me, too, I guess. I mean, part of the reason why maybe you're not so pessimistic on the economy would be that you've got good savings as a result of a strong economy, and so some people maybe had to dip into them. which then, of course, takes away from some of their retirement planning. And, of course, the feeling is, the hope is, that they're going to be able to recover. They say health care or insurance bills were the third most worrisome at 17%. That's small. In fact, that's down from 22% that reported that same thing last year. And again, presumably it's because they have more savings that before this all went in, they were able to at least confidently count on. And maybe, again, they know that the fundamentals are strong and they believe that any of the money that they're going to have to put into paying for health care or taking out of their retirement is going to return relatively quickly or a lot easier than it was beforehand because of the economy. Now, presumably, that's good news for Donald Trump. President Trump, when it comes to the economy, he's going to win that argument. If people are saying, how do we get the economy back to where it was, or at least acknowledging that the economy was incredibly strong and we're going to return to that position, they presumably are going to credit President Trump. They're not going to look at Joe Biden, who hasn't really been talking at any great length on anything, frankly, that's not scripted, but he hasn't been talking about the economy at all. Certainly not recently. And so keeping it focused on the economy? That seems like really good news for President Trump's reelection. And I have to assume that President Trump's team knows that. If I'm being honest, I'm a little shocked that he's not turning everything that we're talking about back into an economic talking point. Now, yes, it is, of course, awkward to do so when we're in the middle of a conversation about police brutality and policing in general. But there are certainly some opportunities to turn this into an economic argument that he can address the police brutality and then pivot. Politicians do that all the time. Now, President Trump is not particularly good, I don't think, at sticking to a talking point that might be delivered to him. He's kind of freestyle, which is something that people love. But also, it makes it a little bit difficult when you're trying to stay on a narrative. And I'm wondering if behind the scenes they're telling the president, you got to pivot. Talk about being law and order and then pivot to the economy. Do that consistently. And I just don't think he's been doing that consistently. But really, on those two topics themselves, hit law and order, you're going to win on that. People see what's going on in this country where we're tearing down statues, where we're trying to destroy buildings, looting businesses. That's a winning argument to say you're about law and order. So say that, then pivot to the other issue that you're going to win on, which is the economy. Joe Biden is not going to win on that issue. We do have several months to go. Not that much longer till November, but we do have some time for the president to reposition this campaign. And if he does that effectively with these numbers, as the economy continues to get better, that's just good news for him. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. When we come back, we just made reference to folks tearing down statues, ignoring history, not being civil. You're someone who knows a lot about the importance of history. Brian Kilmeade, co-host of Fox and Friends, and of course an author of a number of history books. He's going to stop by to get into the controversy when we return.